Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.
Hi there, I'm Jerry Pives, and this week on Real People, I have lined up once again our regular panel of a psychiatrist, an ex-psychologist, and myself, a psychotherapist, as we ponder the important question, what are we really dealing with in these challenging times? Can we really blame, let alone punish, those who have been asleep and contributed so dangerously to what has been going on these last 3 years, and perhaps quite a lot longer? What is justice? How can we find closure? Or do we just pretend, like so many seem to be doing, that, quote, nothing really happened, end quote, whilst all around us, people are actually getting sick and dying? Hear about the nudge units pushing us into division and discord? Hear about our human need for justice? And hear about whether or not the real battle is actually a spiritual one. But first, let's hear Psychobabble by the Alan Parsons Project. Well, a big welcome to Psychobabble. Here we are again, three psychobabblers, two turtle doves and a partridge in a pear tree. And we are going to be talking today about, in these challenging times, what is it that we are really up against? And it is my total pleasure to welcome in Dr. René Debonchy.
Hi.
How are you today?
I'm very well. I've been working these last 2 weeks full-time in consultation liaison psychiatry. That is between physical and mental health, so in the hospital. And there was one patient who was referred, a young woman, and she needed to be seen, but she said triggering factors for her problems are seeing men, and especially old men, who she feels could have conservative ideas. So I went there and I said to her, look, we couldn't find a woman, and I'm a man, and I'm even an old fart. So let's talk. And we hit it off like no problem. Mm. And I've been seeing her every day since then. So the preconceived prejudice ideas that we all have. Mm-hmm. So we can talk a bit about that.
René, can I just ask, would it be okay? We were having a little giggle before we came on because René just shared with us what he says first to his new patients, and I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, it's not my first introduction, but usually after a few seconds, and I say, look, we're all fucked up. So let's start with that. That life is very hard.
Ain't that the truth?
Lovely. I love it. I love the fact that we've got a psychiatrist who starts off with that line.
Keeping it real.
So that's René. Roz, we've got ex-psychologist, no longer allowed to call herself psychologist, although I can call her anything I want. And it's Roz Neelan-Cook from over in Australia, across the pond. Roz, how are you today?
Fantastic, Jerry. I am super excited at the moment. I hope our listeners are feeling super excited too. I feel that we are right on the precipice of great things happening, and these divisions that we've had for so long finally starting to be healed, and a lot of truths coming out. So I'd like to, yeah, definitely talk some more about those pieces later.
Lovely, lovely. And I'm Jerry Pives. I'm a psychotherapist down in Wanaka. And yeah, I'm loving the fact that summer seems to have arrived. I normally love cold and wet, and I love when it rains, and I particularly love it when it rains heavy, and I particularly love it when I can see the rain bouncing off the ground. That's my favorite rain of all. But there's something beautifully introspective about rain. It takes me inwards, and I love the coziness. I don't like to be out in it, but I like to look out the window at it. And I do find it rather reflective inducing, so I like that. But we've got summer now, and I've been moaning about the winter for the last month, and I've been telling winter to get lost, to go away, to bug
bugger off. I've had enough of it. And it's been lingering here in Wanaka, and we've had cold, and we've had... So for someone who loves rain and fresh cold weather, I've been a real curmudgeonly old git, and I've been moaning at winter. And finally, winter has buggered off, and it's wonderful. I love it.
Raindrops falling on my window. Do you remember that?
I remember that.
We have the opposite here. Our winter was cut very short and summer came too soon. And I've been whinging and moaning about that. And we now in Australia, we have the cicadas and they do sort of a 7-year cycle. And I don't know if you can hear them, but it's just this huge, constant noise. Do you know the noise I mean? It's quite deafening. So, I'd go back to the cold personally.
Well, it's great to have the two of you here with me to talk about all things psychological. I wonder if maybe we can kick off before we get into the subject matter that we're going to address. And I believe that each of us is going to take a slightly different tack on that subject, which would be great. But before we get stuck into that, I wonder what's been on your mind this last sort of week or so. If there's been anything that's been occupying your mind that might not have anything to do with what we're talking about today.
Yeah, really the pieces I mentioned before, Jerry, just seeing so many more people and seeing so many initiatives and hearing so much excitement. A lot of fear still, of course, but just so much excitement in the resistance community, if we call it that. And I just am almost giddy with excitement about where things are headed. And I hope I can, pass on that excitement to the listeners too. Because, of course, so many people are feeling tired. We've talked about this before and burnt out and sick of it, absolutely sick of it. You worded it so fabulously a few months ago, Jerry, when you said it's a marathon, and that realization that it's a marathon can really take the wind out of your sails. So I think we're right near the end of the marathon.
Nice. Nice. Well, I can already feel that bubbling energy from you, Ros, which is wonderful. I was struck just how, for Australia in particular, how the study by that Canadian scientist, Dr. David Spiker, I think it is, came out and has proven beyond all reasonable doubt that there is DNA contaminants in Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, to the point 145 times the legal limit. And it qualifies as a GMO, a breach of GMO laws. Mm. So it's just, you're right, it's all coming out, Ros.
Yes, it is. It is. And I did want to speak about some of those bits as well. But
what about you, Rennie? What's been occupying your mind?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's the same as what I said in the beginning, the prejudice of this young woman that she felt triggered due to a past trauma, et cetera, by men. And a lot of women do, and a lot of people then ask for female therapists and female doctors. But that is also stereotyping in a way, because it's, in the end, it's the therapeutic relationship that counts. And it doesn't actually essentially matter so much. It's often, in this woman, she said it very clearly. She said it was a prejudice, obviously. And we all have that. It is our labeling, our prejudices. Mm. So the interesting thing for me this week with finding that for many people, we often talk about COVID, et cetera, and they say, well, COVID is over. That's true. We still have, to a certain extent, a division, but it is, as Ros says, it's getting smaller. And so my son also sent me a video where a number of these things are coming clear. And I said, yes, I've seen this video. And we've been talking about that actually for a long time. But he said, yes, but Dad, you feel that there is something behind all that, and I don't see that yet. So it's interesting that people start indeed to get more of a wider picture, everybody. And I won't say that we are right in our picture, but there is at least the possibility that people see. And it's almost we become united in our skepticism, which is unfortunate because you like to be united in idealism or in cognition rather than in skepticism. but people do feel more and more smaller and larger extent being hoodwinked. Mm. And that's actually what we talk about,
yes.
I think.
Yes.
But, you know, the other thing that's been in my mind this week, you know, and every time I say this, I feel a great hit of grief in my heart for you, Roz, because I'm still able to practice and I'm practicing. And so every time I say that with you present, my heart bleeds a little bit. You know, it's like I feel you're being taken away from your passion and your love. And I want to say that my love extends to you and what you're not able to do. And it touches me deeply that you have been denied the passion of your life. And I love what you're doing now. The Lighthouse Project that you are running is beautiful. I think you are doing beautiful, beautiful work. And I know that your first love was to be working with children and families, and that's your gift. So that all said, I just want to say that I get the great privilege, like Renee, of working with people and at this moment in time. And I was struck this week. Sometimes I'm flattened by my work. I don't know how you feel, Renee, but sometimes what I meet in my work is so powerful and so beautiful and so painful, all wrapped up in one wrapping. You know, it all comes in one beautiful sort of smorgasbord of delicious dish, but it's also got a tang, it's got a spice, and it's also got some edges to it. This last week, I witnessed a guy giving himself a simple message. Words he said to himself, to his child, a 9-year-old child, and he simply said, "I love you." And I feel it now. It's as I recount it, at that moment, something burst open. I can't see that. Some people are gifted with a sight around that. I kind of feel it in my body. I'm very much the body worker. And he looked at me in shock as those emotions hit him, as he kind of connected two lost parts of his soul, of himself, came together. And he said, "No one's ever said those words to me." In his whole life, no one had ever said those words. So when you think about that logically and rationally and cognitively, and notice the disdain with which I use those words, and I do have a fair amount of disdain for those side of things, although I love them too. But when we think about that rationally or cognitively, we're talking about he should never have been able to say that to himself.
Wow.
Because he had no experience of it. And that is what I love about humanity. We have this capacity to step beyond the limitations of our past. And that is profound healing. And I just feel so blessed to be witness sometimes to those moments. That just blew me away this week. And it's just kind of, it's shaped my week, this idea that we can all step beyond our current programming or limitation. I think that might have something to do with our program, actually, now that I talk about it.
This is beautiful. May I comment a bit on that? In the first place, I entirely agree with what you say about Ross, and I feel I don't call you an ex-psychologist. You are a psychologist. Like I was mandated out and I was in the wilderness for 18 months, but I work again in the same position, and somehow you are a psychologist and you are a child psychologist, and nobody can ever take that away from you. So somehow or other, we need to help you to find a way of actually being able to manifest that in your work.
Thank you both. It really touches me to hear you say that. I did, of course, go through a lot of grief at the time when they took my license. However, now, the work I'm doing now, I still see very much as child healing, whatever we want to call it, because by working to raise consciousness, ultimately, and that's what's always driven me in this, it's because I'm a mom. It's because I've just always see this as we have to fix things for our children, our grandchildren, our great up, all the future generations. So I don't feel that I'm not. Obviously, I don't have the one-on-ones with them anymore, but I feel very much so that my role is protecting and healing, ultimately, the children.
Well, Roz, even here on this show, we can bear testament to that, because your contributions here and the way that you bring in the child perspective and the protection of children frequently here on this Psychobabble program already is such a great, it's just a blessing to have your voice here.
Yeah. And by the way, do you know of this organization that started by Penny Marie, Let Kids Be Kids?
I'm not sure about that one particularly. There's a lot of similar ones around, yeah.
We started in New Zealand, and they're very active, and they go through many places and schools, etc., to actually promote healthy upbringing, healthy education, etc. And that reminds me, I saw this morning, indeed, something by Lessing, Doris Lessing, the famous African writer, that she says here a message to children going to school and saying, you're going to be indoctrinated. So then yeah. He goes further into that. And so that's just to let you and the audience know, Let Kids Be Kids. It's got its website. And
take their phones away. Get them off them. Get them outside up trees. In the mud.
All of that is indeed the picture. So go to the website. The second thing is what you said about this amazing and wonderful picture that you gave Jerry. I had, when I worked in Australia and Sydney for 4 years, 5 years, I had a patient, a lovely man, an Irish man who had been abused in a clerical context, if we want to put it like that, in Ireland. Mm. And that was where he had this big trauma. And I said, do you have a photograph of yourself? And he had this little photograph. And I said, well, this is little, call him Tommy, whatever, that's not his name. But I would like you to just actually make a copy of that, or even more copies, and have that everywhere with you. And so he was a builder, and he had in his truck, he had on the front of his dashboard, he had little Tommy. And I said, start to talk with him. Start to actually reunite with this innocent boy who was traumatized. And he did that. And he said, I always have that now. And I talk to him. Even when I go over the Sydney Harbour Bridge, I have him with me. The only place where he can't go is when I am with my girlfriend in the bedroom.
Yeah, good. Glad.
And so different from another person, a wonderful woman who I work with, who has been terribly tortured. And I asked her to bring a photograph, and she brought a photograph of about 7. And for a long time, very long time, about a year, she says, I hate it. Mm. Can't look.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Until we started to say, well, how would that girl feel about that?
Yeah.
And now she's starting to accept more herself. So that it's really all a bridge building in the way of trauma therapy. This is a bit off the topic, perhaps, that we wanted to talk about.
It actually leads into my piece perfectly, if I'm able to sort of kick off.
Can you hold for 1 second, Roz? I just want to come in, first of all, in relation to Let Kids Be Kids, that you mentioned, Renny, and I really thank you for raising that. Penny Marie actually did a beautiful interview with me on this series, Real People. So listeners, if you want to hear more about, and she's a wonderful woman, hear Penny Marie on one of the replays. She did a beautiful interview a while back. And in terms of the this connection that we're going to go on and talk about, actually, I just want to say that, you know, this, the person that actually initiated this concept of talking to the child, as it were, within, relating to the child within, was actually Eric Byrne from Transactional Analysis. And it has been used worldwide by so many different approaches, and mostly unattributed. And yeah. I think attribution matters. And I think it's important to recognize this man, Eric Byrne, who founded Transactional Analysis, he was a genius. I mean, his IQ was 180, and he broke away from psychoanalysis, and he absolutely presented Psychological Understanding for the first time to the public. And he was on the bestseller list for 2 years in New York. And now it's every day to see books about psychology and written in, you know, pop language or popular culture. But right from the beginning, he literally said, I'm going to talk of these matters at the level of an 8-year-old. So that everybody can understand it. And you know, Einstein said something similar. He said, if you can't explain it to a 6-year-old, you actually don't understand it enough yourself. Mm. You know, to translate something into everyday language requires a deeper knowledge of something than some erudite academic article, which I kind of, you know, generally, well, I'm not going to say, I could say something rude about, but I'm going to be very well restrained and I'm going to manage my child ego state who would love to be naughty. And I'm just going to, you know, I just wanted to say that, you know, transaction analysis, you know, nowadays we have schema therapy, we have narrative therapy, we have, and all of that came from the script theory of TA. We have internal family systems, which is where we talk to the parts, and that all originated, and they're all unattributed. Not one of these approaches attributed to Eric Byrne, but it was there in 1947.
There you go. I didn't know that either, Jerry. So thank you for that. And what was his name?
Eric Byrne.
Eric Byrne. Thank you, Eric.
Anyway, let's move on. And Roz, you said this segues rather nicely when we're talking about the connection with the parts of ourselves, with the child, the abused child, the disconnected child. Do you want to kick off then on saying how what you think we're really up against in these challenging times?
Yeah. Because I do, as I mentioned at the start, I do sort of want to talk about all of these divisions and the healing of these divisions. And I think at these times when, as we've said before, everyone is so tired, often when we come to the end of a sort of, I call it a debate or a battle, things get tougher. People sort of really dig in even harder. And I think it's so important to, and we've talked about it before, but I'd like to just quickly reiterate those psychological drivers and forces that are sort of keeping people stuck. And one of the first ones to look at is really exactly what we've just been talking about, this unconscious programming that happens from those early years, from parents. As you said at the start, Jerry, we think we have all of these ideas of our own, but we've sucked them in those first, usually we talk about 7 years. And certainly people like Bruce Lipton, who I'm a huge fan of, he says, I think he says that about 90% of what we think is our conscious interaction with the world throughout the day is actually 90% is from these unconscious programs that were so early on. So if you've had that early trauma, if you've had that lack of or perceived lack of love, no one's ever told you they've loved you. So many things can play into this. Then it's very important to sort of shine a light on those and have understanding of those and how that can be making not only yourself, but other people hold positions and viewpoints that they might have. And then with that, another piece we've talked about is the fact that when we're alarmed, and of course, the world is alarming on so many levels at the moment, you know, not only COVID, we've got divisions on climate, we've got Gaza and Ukraine and gender and all these good, intelligent people who we love, right, are sort of divided like football teams. And of course, then we've got these behavioral and nudge units around the world who target this, right? They know, they're psychological experts, and they're targeting these pieces to keep us divided. We've also got the fact that when people are in crisis, what do? They go to their sort of protective caregivers, and the more frightened they are, the more they cling. And here we're talking about who? The government, right? Well, what's the government? They look after us. What are they saying? And the other piece that we are pack animals. The vast majority of people run with the herd. And if there's cognitive dissonance, if there's all these different bits of information, not only, you know, what's the pack doing? I've got to follow them. And who's leading the pack? It's these, you know, the government and the media and the, in COVID, certainly the medical authorities. And we've seen this again and again and again. And so I just wanted to sort of preface with a reminder of those before I talk now about why I'm really excited, what I'm seeing. I had the pleasure a couple of weeks ago of going and listening to Angus Dalgleish, and I think you've both seen him in New Zealand recently. He's a professor of oncology in, I think, is it Queen Mary, one of the big universities in colleges in London. And he's been talking about vaccine injuries for a long, long time. And let me also preface this by saying, please understand, you know, so many people have suffered horrifically from vaccine injuries. There's no doubt there's been enormous amounts of fatalities. However, they are also an incredible opportunity for waking up, insofar as there are very, very few people that haven't yet experienced this. But what Dalgliesh said, and also then, is it Russell Broadbent? I mix up the Australian politician and the London one. No, Bridgeton, Andrew Bridgeton.
Andrew Bridgeton.
Yeah, sorry. But both Dalgliesh and Bridgeton, Dalgliesh said, if people knew how many doctors I've had around the world, specialist doctors, come to me and tell me about their own vaccine injuries, the vaccine injuries in the families, the people that have lost their lives, but are still too frightened to say these things publicly. And then Andrew Bridgeton said pretty much exactly the same thing. He said, if you knew how many MPs had come to me to discuss their vaccine injuries, the fatalities, et cetera, et cetera. So as before, I'm not saying it's great that we've got, of course, these vaccine injuries, but the point is we are getting so close to this tipping point. This awareness is there. What's driving all these divisions? It's not the point. It's not the data. It's still the fear. It's the fear that is the biggest piece. But we have got to the point, I think, where we've got a groundswell where we're ready to move. It's just one more push. We talked before we came on air about the Port Hedland council meeting. You were talking about a paper, Jerry. But for those listeners who don't know, go and look up, or maybe we can put a link in the notes, Jerry, to what's happened with the Port Hedland council over here in the last week, is that they put, and I don't have the right political legal talk, I think a motion to present a paper to the council about the dangers. Renee, you would be able to explain this better probably, of the mRNA vaccines, et cetera, et cetera. But the point was they voted in favour of this being sent out to all their constituents to warn them about these vaccines and also to share this with every single council in Australia. And that's huge.
Massive.
That's absolutely enormous, because this is what we want. This is the people, or, you know, closer to the people, actually pushing back and saying, no, this isn't okay. So the subject is horrible, but it's very, very exciting. And the final piece, if I can quickly say before we go to discussion, and the reason I said these points at the start is, please remember, as people are finding this out, this is, it's terrifying existentially. The information they're going to receive rocks their entire, you know, foundations of life. It's very, very scary. And most of us in the resistance found out this information bit by bit by bit by bit, and it was horrifying enough. But potentially we're looking at masses of people. You know, I can't even think of the words, but it's just having this electric shock of all this horrific information. People are going to be in a desperate state. So I really, really implore, for, you know, from the bottom of my heart, listeners, I know people are fed up, they're angry, they've been lost their jobs, they've been abused, they've had lost families and friends. But this is where we have to, if at all possible, or things will certainly move faster if we do, be sort of the bigger person. We almost need to be the parent of the, you know, inconsolable child. We, you know, to hold compassion for them, to understand they're about to go through something so horrific. And we need to hold grace if at all possible.
Thank you. Bravo, Ross. Really well done. And indeed, this Port Hedland is really interesting, because they said that any mRNA vaccines, they see the danger and they should not be introduced anymore. And of course, this is with all the flu vaccines, and all the vaccines now are being mRNA. And people need to be aware of that, that they are genetic modulators of our immune system.
And they need to be asking their dentists about the anesthetics used, because I believe there's been introduction recently on that. So people need to pay attention and ask and challenge their dentists. What's in the anesthetics? Can I have a copy, please, of that? We need to be awake to all of this, right?
That is that part, but it is in every part of society that actually people are waking up. We had this interesting thing of the fluoridation here this week in Tauranga. So I've been involved in the fluoridation since the 70s, actually, living in Napier as a GP, and Hastings was fluoridated and Napier wasn't a sister city. And they wanted to then bring in fluoridation into Napier, and I was quite against that. Now, it's important to realize it's only 5% of the countries in the world actually have fluoridation. And in Europe, it's only England and Ireland, and it is some states in America. So that's important, because when I came in Europe and this year, and I talked about that they want to reintroduce or introduce fluoridation, in Holland, they said, but why? We threw that out 50 years ago. And in Switzerland, they said, have they not caught up with any modern literature? Now, this comes to a head because the government says in New Zealand, all municipalities now need to fluoridate. There was a court case about that last year, that it was found that the government, Ministry of Health, said that because it did actually not consider the Bill of Rights, and a previous High Court state had said fluoridation is actually a medication that you put in the water. So we put on, or the anti-fluoridation group, together with NZDSOS, a court case to say, well, that fluoridation needs to be halted and at least delayed. And we lost that. So the judge said, essentially, what the government says is law. Now, in Tauranga, where I live, interesting this week, there was on the for the council, there was going to be a vote of this fluoridation. And the mayor has read the most modern newest scientific research, with a huge research in America and a court case saying that it is indeed, when it is 7 parts per million or more, it is so toxic and neurotoxic that can bring down the IQ of young children, especially if it is in the drinking water of pregnant women, down even 6 to 7 IQ points. The mayor had seen that, and he himself at the vote, he spoke, he said, look, I am against putting it in the water. And there was an interesting vote, because it was 4 against 7. 7 voted, and now Tauranga is going to be fluoridated. And 3 or 4 said, no, we don't. So there was a split vote, but it was still a majority. And the majority said, and that was also interesting, because I think this is exactly the point that we talk about. Why do we need to fluoridate? A, the government says it, and it's become a law. Second, the government says that if you don't do that after 30 November, you need to pay a $200,000 fine and $10,000 per day that you don't do it. Mm. They said, we can't afford that. So it is, again, it's the same of authority thinking and coercion on the one hand and money on the other hand. And whether it is a doctor being hesitant and not speaking out, or whether it is fluoridation, or whatever it is, because people are waking up, they don't want to be told anymore, this and this is how you need to think. And that in itself is a beautiful thing. But that's why also the attacks, if you like, against the individual thinking is becoming stronger and stronger. So when we talk about what is it that we're up against, it is actually on so many levels, but essentially it's coercion of preventing us from actually being who we are and expressing that.
I mean, those statistics, which I've heard before, Rene, every time I hear them, they somehow become even more damning to me, that you talk about, you know, 7 points lowering of children's IQ. And all I can think of is is what it says in the Bible about you damage one of my children. And that is closest to the most unforgivable thing. You know, that is something. And that's where I love your work, Roz, because your work is all about protecting the children. But even when I hear it, a chill goes through me, Renny, when I think of that damage that they have just voted to inflict on children in their area. And I would not like to be going to bed at night as one of those people who voted for fluoridation. I'm not sure I would ever recover from that, to think that. And that's part of the horror show we're on. And you're right, Renny, there's multiple levels of this.
I do admire Mayer, who actually stood up to that.
Absolutely. What was his name, Renny? Do you remember his name?
Mahe Drysdale. He was an Olympic rower. He was actually a champion. And my daughters are both rowers, or were, and they were always very much in awe of him and know him.
Wow.
And he's now the mayor in town. Mm. And he did speak up.
Yeah, well, respect to him. Right. And he's not going to be alone, as we've seen from the Australian, the Australian Council, yes, speaking out the truth. And I think it is coming out more and more. Roz, did you want to come in on anything?
Yes, I just wanted to, because again, I always am trying to look at what are these people thinking when they have voted in this way. And for this issue, I mean, because we've had fluoridation in Australia my entire life, and you'd go to the dentist and they want to give you a fluoride treatment. And I remember the first time I said to one of the dentists, and I've done it a few times when they've said, fluoride, do you want fluoride? And I've said, no. They look at you as though you're a complete mad person, and that's their training,
yeah,
right? And yeah, so just to give a little bit of grace to those councillors that did vote in favour of it, that's their programming as well. And so I always just want to keep that open so that when people want to start damning them, they are doing, most of them, there might be a few that are getting backhanders and whatnot, but most of them think they are doing the right thing because it's protecting children's teeth.
Every doctor who did vaccine felt the same.
Yeah.
I'm doing this to protect children. Unfortunately, the propaganda in so much of the indoctrination.
Mm.
And that's, as an example, I sent some of the other science countering that, of which there's no so much, thousands of research, not in the mainstream, but otherwise it's coming through everywhere. And if you want to know. And so I sent that to a colleague of mine, and she said, please don't send it. It makes me too anxious.
Yeah, yeah.
So we need to realize that this brings insecurity. And we talked about that before. If you go against what the majority does, you are alone. And then you're alone in a very large group of millions of people nowadays, but it still takes balls. It still takes guts to actually do that.
Well, I'm really glad that you mentioned cojones here, Renee, because when we talk about programming, we can make the error, I believe, of regarding all programming as something that we passively have taken on. And this programming was given the name of script by Eric Byrne of Transaction Analysis, a life script that we actually, before the age of seven, we set ourselves a story. And it's a story for survival in our family of origin or our environment of origin. If we didn't have parents and we grew up in children's homes or whatever, we created a story that explained sometimes the horror of what we're going through.
Mm.
So the story is not accurate. But what we do is we take all the messages coming at us and we come up with a solution and we work out how we're going to get through life. And that is done before the age of seven. And after that, we're pretty much unconsciously following that plan unless events or therapy or something comes along that causes us to question. And one of the blessings of COVID is I think all of us have been confronted with a reality that has challenged some of our deepest held patterns of programming or belief that we've taken on. But there is this element of choice and free will. And I do believe that I cannot remove the spineless, debollocked behavior of the people that have been more frightened of their lack of income or what others may think than they have for the human spiritual desire to speak truth. And I want every listener to hear who has stood up against the narrative. Every one of you that's listening right now, do you realize that what it says about the state of your spine and the state of your hormones? You must have been so strong and so resilient, and I include you two here, to have stood against the flow. It says something about the psychological resilience that you have. And whilst I acknowledge the horror that people are coming through, I also do not want to discount the courage and the bravery of the people that have stood up, nor do I want to discount the element of spinelessness that has faced us all around. And I cannot let that go. Maybe that's my failing, but I cannot let that go. Roz, come in. And then Roz, I know I've stirred up a hornet's nest here.
For me, the spineless word is kind of triggering me a little bit here, Jerry. And I think it's almost putting it out there as being a volitional piece. I know Asim Mahutra talks about willful blindness, as though many, many people have made a conscious and deliberate choice. But from where I stand, when you have those sorts of existentially terrifying pieces coming against you, I'm going to lose my job, I'm going to lose my house, my, you know, standing in society, they put a lot of, you know, huge downward pressure and people disassociate. I don't think there's many people that are actually sitting there going, oh, I'm too frightened, I'm not going to do it. There are, of course, there are some, but there are many who have literally disassociated. And remember that all of their medical boards and newspapers, they're just getting hammered every day by all of this bullshit, excuse me, propaganda. Well, Renee swore, so now I feel like I'm able to, but sometimes, you know, we are, and sometimes it's bloody appropriate.
We're having a swearing week, aren't we? Let's face it.
But the point is, if you're even, you know, getting a, okay, something's not right here, they're still jumping on Google, they're still jumping on LinkedIn, on Facebook, they're going to their medical boards, to whoever. And so that little maybe window of opportunity, it's smashed because they're being told that we're all idiots, crazy, tinfoil hat wearing. So I just do want to, I mean, I like absolutely what you said, and honor, because for people who have stood up, it was so hard, so hard. But I just try to give a bit more, again, I've said it again, grace to those who aren't, because I do. I am so worried about them and the catastrophe, the acute distress that we're facing when they do find out. It's not going to be pretty. Their minds are going to be blown. So
that is indeed true. And I feel deep compassion for people who, in order to do the good, actually found that they have actually done the wrong to their own immune system with these developing cancers, all these developing immune deficiencies, other illnesses. And the greatest side effect of the COVID booster was actually the increase in getting COVID. That is a whole different thing. But what you talk about is this resilience that we got. It did actually require a crisis to become awake. And what you talked about, Jerry, is in the beginning, when a child is either traumatized or whatever, we become, practically all of us before 7 or 9, and certainly with later indoctrination and education, we become what Winnicott said, the false self. And that means that that together with indoctrination that we started here with in education, etc., and that false self is actually increasing in our lives in the way of belonging, our role, or whatever the expectations that we have of each other and of ourselves, and the whole idea of growth and the whole idea of getting bigger, better, more more money, bigger car, etc. in the materialistic sense. Now, it often takes a crisis or an illness where people then have two ways actually to do that. And that's where the awareness that you, Ross, talked about and the freedom is they can go two ways. They can either wake up, and waking up means, why is this crisis in my life? What does it ask of me? Does it ask me to comply? Or does it actually ask me to bloody well say no, because it really goes against the grain? When you do that, then you actually get a degree of liberation at the same time as this loneliness and feeling, shit, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. But it is the pathway to an open, free human being. The other one, if you don't, then you keep on complying and things will come back in different ways to you to wake you up in different ways. Physically, emotionally, crisis in your marriage, crisis here, there, and everywhere. Mm-hmm. So the whole thing of what are we up against are the outward things that we see and that wake us up and that try to control us. But we're actually coming up against that within ourselves that is often preventing us from waking up. Mm. It's both an inner and an outer process. And that is not just in a sociological sense, but certainly in the whole spiritual sense of who am I?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Rene. And thank you, Roz. If you're wondering just what you're listening to, you are listening to Psychobabble on Reality Check Radio with me, Jerry Pives, Rene de Monchy, and Roz Nealon-Cook. And we have been discussing, really, I think, the fascinating subject of, well, Roz, what you've been really throwing into the soup pot, if I may say so, is the element of division and the importance, really, of doing everything we can to fight that, to avoid becoming a world of football teams always in conflict with each other, always fighting against each other. I wonder what you, as the listener, think about that. And if you have any thoughts, I'd love to hear from you. So do send us an email to inbox@realitycheckradio.com or just text at 2057 right away, right now. Just get onto your computer and or phone and send us your thoughts on this really important subject. But we're going to move on to the second. We've got three takes on this subject of we're looking at the question of what are we really up against. But before we do that, Roz, what piece of music do you have for us?
How about Lean on Me by Bill Withers? Because I think this time more than any other in my lifetime, we do need to be leaning on each other and looking after our friends, our families, our communities, ourselves with compassion and trying to stay clear of those divisions. And remember that we are all human beings. We are all family members. We are all made from love.
Beautiful, Roz. Lean on Me by Bill Withers. That was Lean on Me by Bill Withers. And what a beautiful message of our need for each other and our need to be together, not divided. And that was certainly Roz's message today. Thank you for that, Roz. Really needed to hear that. And yeah. So what's my contribution to this subject of what are we really dealing with? One of the things that those of us who are awake are dealing with is massive. And I get that we absolutely need to be the bigger person when people around us start to wake up suddenly to information that we've been processing over the last 3, even 4 years now. I can't believe how long it's been going on. And it has become a marathon, as we've spoken about before. It's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And in that process, we've had to take care of ourselves. But sometimes I think it's really important to name what it is we're dealing with and what we've been dealing with. Many, many of my friends and the people in the freedom movement have been struggling with health, with exhaustion, with overwhelm, with just feeling they can't take anymore. And I want to speak to those people because they're my people. And I know everyone's my people. I know that on a deep spiritual level. But unlike you two, I still reserve the right to be partisan. And I know you guys have such passion for the freedom and the truth, and I absolutely respect you for that. But I have a part of me that is very partisan. I like football. I like being on one team. And I suppose I do like the drama a fair amount, so I have to admit to all of that.
You don't talk about the Team New Zealand, do you?
Over my dead body will I refer to take one for the team. Absolutely, that has been the words that have been destroyed by certain individuals, words like safe and effective. I refuse to give those words up. So yes, I am a global team where there's millions of us all across the world who are reaching and fighting and challenging the demonic forces that are going on here. And that is, I think, what we're really up against. My bottom line on this, we're up against a profoundly spiritual battle. And it's only at the spiritual level that we can fully understand what we're up against. But that wasn't what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about naming what we're confronted with almost on a daily basis. And I believe that we're facing a triple whammy. It's not cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance suggests the idea that there's one idea and another idea and they're in conflict, okay? I want to talk about a multiplex dissonance, I think we've got dissonance happening on multiple levels, and we've got genuine concerns and grievances that have not been addressed and are not being addressed at this moment. They are not, and I want to say that they must be addressed. So what are these grievances I'm talking about? Well, number one, many of us who stood up for truth, no matter what the cost, we were viciously attacked and character assassinated by family, by friends, by colleagues, by work, by governments, by regulatory bodies. And we suffered character assassination. We suffered demeaning humiliation. We were told that we were, you know, in some way less than sensible all the time while we were doing the research and facing the horror. So what I want to say is there was a massive injustice, and these don't just go away. They sit on us. That they can sit on us, and they are what was done to us. And also, there's been the second sort of whammy, if you like, is that there's been no reinstatement. People who lost their jobs, psychologists who had their licenses taken away, have still not been reinstated with an apology. Now, I believe greatly in restitution, in justice, justice. I don't believe in injustice. I believe in justice. And restitution and acknowledgement is a fundamental part of what I believe makes things right again. That if I have wronged someone, it's important upon me and my own soul to say, I wronged you, I'm sorry, and to own that behavior. And so apologizing for what has been done wrong is a fundamental part of us finding a new harmony and a new going forward. So I want to state that has not happened. So we're all carrying the weight of that as well. That is an injustice that still is being perpetuated. And then we get this ridiculous idea that everything is back to normal. And the absolute insult that everything can just, oh, well, we're just back now. We're over it. You know, we're over COVID. Excuse me. People are dying. Lives have been ruined. You cannot walk around as if nothing has happened. That is a delusional psychosis. And we have to face reality, and we do it together. We lean on each other, Ros, is your beautiful song that you've chosen. We need to lean on each other to come into the truth and into reality. So I want to say that if you feel a little bit tired, if you've just felt a little bit overwhelmed, or you've had a tough day, look at what you've been handling. It's like Atlas carrying the weight of the world on his shoulders. You know, that image of the demigod holding the weight of the world on his own shoulders. Some of what we're dealing with is unresolved, yes, undealt with trauma. And the last thing that I know works psychologically is pretense, discounting, or suppression. It's actually suppression that makes us sick, psychologically, spiritually, physically. The whole purpose of psychological understanding is to unpack the suppressed material so that we can breathe freely again and not have the pressure of those upon us. So, do you know, the image that comes to mind, and I often talk in images, and this will be the last thing I say for a bit. The image that comes to mind is that we're in a war, only these invisible bombs keep dropping and going off, and people are dropping dead around us. People are falling sick. People are confused, because actually trying to deny this reality is as damaging to the psyche as facing it. In fact, it's probably more damaging if we're honest about that. But while it's like I'm walking through a battlefield and people are dropping dead, and there's other people walking past saying, no, nothing's going on. This is all perfectly normal. Athletes should drop dead on football pitches. Children should catch young cancers. Old people should suddenly drop dead from, apparently now, the latest thing I've been hearing is that people are dying of dementia. They're not dying of dementia, they're dying of other things. And now anything but the C word, and it's not cancer, it's the COVID word, it's the vaccination word, it's the V word. So what I'm saying here is that we cannot condone suppression, denial, delusion, and the not facing of reality. All of my life's work has been helping people to face the reality of their situation, their past, and what's been happening. You know, the phrase that I have most often used with my clients is say, well, so that was some childhood you've described to me. And it does seem to me that you had one of your legs amputated with that childhood. You've still got one good leg, but you're having to work and live as if you've only got one leg. So please take account of yourself. Be kind to yourself when you don't sprint the 100 meters at the same speed as everybody else. Be kind to yourself. Understand that the impact of what you have had to grow up with and what you've had, you need to understand and have compassion for that. So my contribution to this conversation is, if you're feeling a bit knackered, if you're feeling a bit overwhelmed, there are some very, very good reasons why that would be going on. And I look forward to the day where we can have justice, where we can have reconciliation, and where human beings can once again lean on each other. Over to you guys.
I loved what you said, Jerry. Yes, I think our ability to lean on each other and be kind to ourselves, it's so important, isn't it? We've been brutalized. And, you know, on top of all the things that you've mentioned, we've got this incredible, Renee will know the mechanisms. We're now seeing myocarditis in children. You've seen those studies come out in the last few weeks, all these heart conditions, incredible things, let alone those who have gotten to the space where they've felt it necessary to end their own lives. I think there's never been a more important time, and we've spoken about this probably each time we've been together, but you need to arm yourself. We're in a massive battle, whatever way you look at it, cognitively, emotionally, spiritually. And so we have to be at the very strongest we can be. And so that means get out in nature, make sure you're getting out, you're getting your feet on the ground every day. Make sure you are exercising and do whatever you can to be getting at least 8 hours sleep a night if you can. Eat healthy foods, pure foods, not with letters and numbers all over the boxes. Make sure you're connecting with like-minded folk. And if you have a meditation practice or a prayer practice, really trying to get in as much as that can, because we need to be as strong as we can throughout our entire sort of hole on our entire being, so that we can engage at these incredibly difficult times.
So true, Roz, so true.
The other piece I wanted to talk about, Jerry, is with the apologies. Now, this is one that's come up a lot in the resistance sort of world. And there's been a lot of social media from a lot of folk demanding apologies and, you know, there will be no amnesty, we must move on, et cetera, et cetera. The way I sort of view this is that there's two types of apologies, aren't there? And any parent knows this. And well, we all do as a children. How many of us were told, you can't leave your room until you apologize, right? It was there all the time. And yes, I'm sorry, all right. And it's just, it's completely useless. An apology, a true apology, is from the heart, yeah? And it is not something that can be demanded or, you know, requested. And I believe those apologies will come. And they're going to be, again, with huge crisis and floods of tears. And I don't think we need to be demanding apologies at all. And I know that's not what you're saying, Jerry, but there certainly has been a call for that. They will come. They will come. But they will only come when we are safe enough to receive them. There was one other point I was going to make.
That was beautifully put, thank Rose, you. By the way.
The other piece on justice, and as you were saying it, because I hear this from so many other folk, and certainly when I first had my license taken, I was Nuremberg too, come on, you know. But again, I see looking at justice, and I'm not saying there doesn't need to be, we don't need to deal with bad actors involved in this. However, the punishment, even as a concept, you know, humans, we get this dopamine rush. People used to go and queue up to go to the Colosseum and go and see beheadings and all of these things. But what did they actually do? They didn't do anything. They might have, for a moment, made someone feel a little bit better, but it's not the solution. And so I believe the solution is looking at what is the system that has allowed these bad actors to arise. Because who knows, if we'd have been born in Fauci's family with all the conditions and the genetics that made him become who he did, maybe we would have acted the same way. So I think really looking at our entire planet, our entire, I don't know, human makeup, how we got to where we did, and how this system, right, the system's never going to give apologies. It's the system that sort of allowed so much of this to happen. And to me, that would be almost like divine justice or pure justice, that we can, as a collective, come together and look at everything that has allowed this to happen and then take the measures together from that place of love to make sure this never, ever happens again. But I don't believe that's going to be by, you know, tons of trials and gallows and all of that sort of thing. I do understand, because I've been there myself in that state of outrage and grief where that was what I was looking for, but I don't believe it's the way out.
Thank you, Roz. Thank you, Roz. What about you, Renée? What do you got to say on this one?
There is this French expression, tout savoir, c'est tout pardonner. To know everything is to pardon everything. That is essentially what you say about what you just said about Fauci. And yet, I don't quite believe on that. There is a degree of passivity in that. Because Fauci, whatever his upbringing and his thing might have been, he let obviously that inner part of him that knows from right and wrong and true and untrue, he let that be displaced by the money he was offered, by his reputation for the NIHA, for serving with four presidents and be the US medical scientist. So he ran away with this almost luciferic seduction.
I absolutely agree, René, and that's where I believe it's we need the entire system, the entire culture, the entire world to change. I just want to make a point. You said about sort of being too forgiving, it's too passive. I don't actually see it that way, because I'm not saying if we were Fauci, et cetera, I'm under the assumption it's that sort of power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. But we're also looking at things like MKUltra, if we're allowed to tread into those areas here, Jerry. There are so many, it's my understanding, people such as Fauci, so many people up at the top of these trees who have been compromised since they were children. I don't know Fauci himself, his situation, but I'm certainly have heard enough compelling evidence that most of them have been. So in that sense, they are victims themselves. And what I'm not saying, therefore, all should be forgotten and we're sitting there and being passive and forgiving and, you know, singing kumbaya. I'm talking about a place of ruthless compassion. So I'm talking about the Faucis, et cetera, of the world. I almost see them as broken machines. They need to be removed. They need to be taken out. But the idea of punishing them and going through that whole sort of legal process of putting them in the naughty chair and I think they should just be locked away and, they need to be removed. That's how I see it.
I love that expression, by the way. Ruthless compassion is such a beautiful phrase.
I agree entirely with you. Forgiving is actually an active process. It means that I go to a degree of suffering myself in order to forgive. Well, that is an active part. We have been indoctrinated with this falsehood of growth in economic sense, in reputation sense, and that has been a big, big seduction. It still is to people. For somebody in employment to say, actually, I'm going to go one step lower, or I'm going to go into a smaller car, or a not so expensive home, that is an active decision that goes right against the grain of what we've been indoctrinated against. So the whole beginning, and that's why I say it won't change if you remove the people, the Faucis of this world. Not at all. Because you will get new Faucis and new people as long as our education system is not completely changed. Our health system has not become really primary and only patient-focused. If the social system is not really based on brotherhood, but as it is at the moment, on competition instead of cooperation.
Yes.
A whole economic social fabric needs to completely change.
Love every word. And with that, global psychoeducation, children understanding their entire dopamine reward pathways and how they drive people towards all of this need for power and money.
Yeah. So this is really a fascinating discussion. And it's fascinating because you're listening to Psychobabble on Reality Check Radio with myself, Jerry Pives, René de Monchy, and Ros Nealon-Cook. And we're considering the issue of what are we really up against in these difficult times? And Ros's contribution was to be aware of the false divisions that are being created and for us to seek that which I think unites us. Would that be a fair summary in brief, Ros?
Yes. And to arm yourself for the battle.
Yes. Yes. And mine was to acknowledge the brutality that has happened to so many of us that have stood up and to take care of ourselves and to be mindful of what we're actually dealing with is probably the greatest psychological attack that individuals have had, I believe, ever. But that's just my own view. And before we go on to you, René, I'd like to play a piece of music. But before I do, I want to say, what do you think? Let's hear from you. 2057, text us. We'd love to hear and read your emails about this subject. You can email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio and you can text us at 2057. But to round off my little bit, I chose a piece of music for us to have a little break, a little musical break. And I've chosen Fields of Gold by Sting. And I was thinking, I just had an instinct for that piece of music. I didn't sort of work it out rationally. But when I thought about it, I thought, you know what? Something about this piece of music immediately resonates in me personally of both love and loss, like the role of love and the role of loss and the role of love. And something in this, when I listen to this piece of music, it evokes in me both a profound sense of that which has gone, like so many pieces of music, but at the same time about the enduring power of love, a human love, you know, not some robotic AI-generated concept of love, but real, warm, pulsating, flesh and bone, human-to-human love. And that's what this piece of music does for me. So I'm going to play it now.
by Sting, Fields of Gold. So that was Fields of Gold by Sting, and you're listening to Psychobabble on Reality Check Radio, and we're discussing the issue once again of what are we really dealing with? Rene, what are we dealing with?
It is indeed a spiritual war, and it is for the soul of man. And that has been going on for a while. And there's two areas, actually, or two opposing paths. And it's whether you have that in Buddhist terms, in the way of non-attachment as an ideal on the Eightfold Path, if you see it in the Christian terms of Satan and the Christ being, the godlike being that we are with the temple of God, a physical body, whatever it is, there's always the two paths of seduction. And if I look at what my immune system as the representation of that real inner part of mine in aspects of physical aspects, energetic, vibrational, spiritual aspects, all of that. And it's the DNA, that most specific part that we have. And that is under attack. And what can happen then is that we can, on the one hand, getting an hardening in the physical body because the immune system is willfully targeted. It's a weaponized attack. Literally, I mean, the gain of function that you come as a society and you're going to make viruses more virulent as part of biological warfare, because that's really how this whole COVID thing, but any of the mRNA things, the vaccines are, they are actually bioweapons, and they have now the fragments of DNA, as Jerry said, within them. So they will change my DNA if I take the vaccines, and probably due to that, the DNA of future generations even, I don't know. That means that it actually dehumanizes us. It takes away this connection that we have with our higher self, our ideals that we can only get at through my physical body. And the physical body, to go on that, that is attacked on all areas. And you mentioned that, Rose, the importance of nutrition. And I just saw a very interesting American video yesterday by a doctor who realizes that food in America is no longer food. And so that you have 40% of people being obese, children, diabetes, 25% of adult women are on antidepressants. So many children, adolescents on antipsychotics, because that is in a way the very materialistic outlook of the human being as a conglomerate of chemical, physiological entities or what do you call that, processes that can be modulated, and we can do that. So that's one part. We can become so materialistic that we don't have a sense of our higher functions, our ideals, our idealism to help other people, to help the world, to work for the world. That's one part. The other part is that part, which is in other terms called, let's say, Mephistopheles or Lucifer, that says, no, 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 you won't have anything to do with this world. Just do as if you are a purely spiritual being and don't let yourself be fettered by the world. Now, that is an escape that actually also makes us unhuman, dehumanizes us. And it's interesting how I read a lecture of Rudolf Steiner in 17 October 1917, and I'm just going to read a little bit of that, that people will say in the future that it is pathological to even think in terms of spirit and soul. People, sound, will speak of nothing but the body. the soul will be made non-existent with the aid of a drug. People will invent a vaccine to influence the organism as early as possible, preferably as soon as it is born, so that this human body never even gets the idea that there is a soul and the spirit. And he talks about the 1917. And of course, you had the smallpox disastrous vaccination. And I'm just reading a very interesting book called Dissolving Illusions about the whole vaccination path, how it had been corrupted and with coercion right from the beginning, with mandates already in the 1850s. So this attack to the integrity of our physical body in order to think independently, in order to work in solidarity with our fellow human beings, not as separate entities, but as individuals in the much wider concept, that is what I see as under threat. And so when you say that we're working so that this is never going to happen again, I never believe that. That was said after the First World War, after the Second World War. No. As long as we don't actually change, it will happen again.
René, you talked about what was behind, and I was really interested in that. You mentioned something about this, and I wondered if you could say a little bit more about what do you think is behind? You talk about the material, you talk about what we can, you know, in the elements of the world and all of that. But did you also want to say something about what is behind?
Life, the sanctity of life, has very much to do with listening. And to listening in the way of words. And if I would listen, and it was, for instance, when you talked first about this, this man who said to his inner self, "I love you." We listen to the words that you spoke, and that is on the cognitive level. We also listened at the same time on the emotional level, the feeling level, what it did to you, and that came out in your voice, your identification, how it touched you. And also even in the sense, so that's the emotional life. Also even in the sense of your behavior, how there became a stillness at the same time as an inner joy in your face. So that is simply one part of listening, and listening really to the world and what is happening in the whole literally cabal and noise of the world, and to not be entirely distracted by that. Because if I look at the manifestations of the spiritual war that I mentioned, and that I gave the quote by Rudolf Steiner of 1917, what are we up against? It is an inner part that we talked about, the sense of not wanting to give up security or seeking security, leading to a degree of complacency, perhaps, also a laziness in thinking. And why do we do that? Often because of it is too hard, it is too difficult. It is, if I just quietly sit here, nobody will see me, and I don't rock the boat, and I might not be 100% happy, but at least I live my life and the world won't see me. Well, unfortunately, that is no longer the case. In fact, probably even this one may be checked by all sorts of Googles and Zooms and SIS and whatever. Certainly our telephone and apps that we do, so we can't sit anymore that nobody will see us. That is an illusion. So we need to also really see our own demons and recognize that in order to become aware. And then we have a choice. That is the main part. And then there's the outer things that I've been thinking about that. What do we confront as outer things? And that really goes into the four elements, even. If I look at the element of air, the sun, the arrogance of science that talks what I just read an article about, solar radiation modification to reflect back the sunlight. What an arrogance, actually, to put aluminium and other things in the air in order for the sun radiation to be reflected back, as if there was no reason for why the sun is shining the way it shines.
Such hubris, right? The hubris is one of the words that I think of when I think of that.
Absolutely. Then, so that's in the sense of air. Then in the sense of water, the pollution, the fluoridation, the chlorination, all of that.
Yeah.
The earth that we talked about, the nutrition, the importance of good organic nutrition, the way of actually medications, the influence of medication when they are used beyond the scope of what they should actually be used for, because they can be absolutely life-saving. I have experienced that myself, as you know. So I will never poo-poo medicine as such. But what I'm angry about is the rape of the spirit of healing by pharmaceutical companies on the one hand, and on the other hand, by government manipulation. You know this vaccination business, and I don't want to talk continuously about vaccination, but this COVID has been a trillion dollar business. I can't even imagine 1 trillion, but apparently it's something like 2 or 3 trillion. The number of billionaires have skyrocketed due to this. So there is something in that whole thing, and the whole corruption of how that comes about. And more that is coming out. The whole education is also a pollution, as we talked about. The whole, and that's in the social sense, the digital banking, the control, the feeling of impotence, that powerlessness, that I can't do anything about it. I'm against it, and yet I can't, apart from keeping cash. Please keep on using cash. And
go to that, yeah.
Say no. Anyhow, there's so many things that happen in the moment. And why are they happening? Because I think we as human beings have crossed a threshold of awareness, a threshold of consciousness.
Absolutely.
Really are. And the opposing forces, if you, whatever you want to call them, economic coercion forces, they will fight that tooth and what do you call it?
Nail.
Nail. Yeah. Because they do not want to give up control. And therefore, we still live in the black and white way of thinking that we have from the 19th century. We can talk about that separately. Mm. That is all. Because we are here, because you and I and all of us as human beings have that inner strength, that inner resilience, if we got the possibility of listening to that inner voice and to have the courage to stand against what we think is not right. So the human being is the being that is really, and in biblical terms, it's created in the image of God. In all religions, there is that sense, one way or other, that we are that. And therefore, let's say, when in the past, when people were ill in the Greek times, it was the soul that was going to be healed. So the temple sleep, the priest, doctor, whatever. We've completely changed that into, if you have an illness, you need to have a pill. That's relatively new, that even when I started medicine in the 60s, we did botany in our first year in order to recognize the various plants and prescribe and make medicines. Now, all of that is gone. And that is not by coincidence. That is by a whole plan that I think has been going on probably already hundreds of years, but certainly aggravated in the last 50 years. And those are what I call, I use the word Luciferic on one hand, to escape from the world and close your eyes and have wings and be just a spiritual being. On the other hand, the forces, and you can call them Ahrimanic, satanic forces that wants to dehumanize us into machines, into transhuman mixed with the computer sort of beings with AI. Those are actually the forces that are behind all of this. And every religion has got these counter forces to challenge us simply to become really who we are, to let go of this false self that we have created and been indoctrinated with. And that's why this patient who you talked about, or this man who I talked about, who adopted, as it were, his younger self as his own, he has, through a crisis of suicidality, he's come through that and really started to see who he really is, an integrated human being. And we all are that.
I love the passage in Ephesians, I think it's Ephesians 6, where I think it's so relevant to today, where St. Paul, he wrote something, well, I've got it right here, just hold on 1 second. I just love that bit where he says, this is from Ephesians 6, verse 12, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." I just can't get over how relevant that particular passage is to what is behind what we're dealing with these days. And I think you referenced that too, Rene, in that concept that nothing that has happened in any of these fields is by accident, I don't believe. I believe that we have been subjected to what is probably one of the most ancient wars ever going. Come in, Rene.
In that respect, I would like to say a verse for our time. "We must eradicate from the soul or fear and terror of what comes towards us out of the future. We must acquire serenity in all our feelings and sensations about the future. We must look forward with absolute equanimity to everything that may come. And we must think only that whatever comes to us is given to us by a world direction full of wisdom. It is part of what we must learn in this age, namely, to live out of pure trust without any security in existence. Trust in the ever-present help of the spiritual world. Truly nothing else will do if our courage is not to fail us. Let us seek the awakening within ourselves every morning and every evening." And that's also part of my music then, is Simon and Garfunkel. "Hello, darkness, my old friend, I've come to talk with you again," which I think is quite apt for this time we live in.
I love it when you sing, Rene.
I want to start singing harmonies, but Zoom won't let us. Roz, would you like to close with any reflections or comments, either to what Rene has said or anything that you wish to? We're coming to the end now, so I'm just wondering whether you'd like to close with anything.
I loved what you just read, Rene. I also, as I was listening to the words, was thinking, so much easier said than done, to get to that place of equanimity and safety. But I feel that when I'm with you two. And I'd like to really just say to the listeners again, be excited. I know it's been such an incredibly tough time, but so much is going on and so much more is about to come out. There are truckloads of initiatives happening around the world, and we really are nearing the end of the line. So do everything you can to bolster yourself in the ways that we've talked about. And please have hope. Please hold hope in your heart. And I'm sending so much love to you all, to everyone. You've been through so much. We really do get it. But we're getting there. We're almost there.
Yeah, I keep saying ho to that. And people may not understand what I mean when I say ho. It's a Native American tradition that in the meetings, if you agreed with what someone was saying, you could just go ho. And it didn't interrupt them. It didn't put yourself in the way. There was no ego involved in that. It was saying, I agree. You know, this has my stamp. So if I use the word ho, you know, it's because I don't want to interrupt you, but I'm behind what you say, and I validate and concur with what you're saying. What about you, Renee? What do you want to say to close off to the listeners?
I have been in the habit for the last half year, I think, to try to say on the hour, very simple, thank you. Nothing more than that. And that actually is so helpful for your immune system, I find.
Yes, gratitude. I love the Italian word, gratitudine. I love that word. Yes, well, thank you for listening. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to Psychobabble. We'll come back again in another month, the three of us, and talk about whatever's coming up for us. If you've got a subject you want us to discuss or write in and tell us what you'd like us to talk about, we'd love to know what you think we're really dealing with at these times. I think every person's opinion has actually completely equal value. And what I love about being here with you guys is we're all very different, and yet we hold each other in love and respect. And I hope the listeners can hear that between us all, that we're not the same. We don't have to be the same to get on. We can be very different, but we are human. And there's something in that that is purely divine, in my humble opinion.
Oh.
Kia ora.
Of course, we say kia ora.
Yes, but kia ora somehow, it's more interruptive. I've tried it, and I've asked groups that I've run here in New Zealand if they could use kia ora, and they don't, because it's almost too, it's too invasive. Whereas ho, you know, it just, except if you have lots of hoes, it does sound rather Father Christmas trying to climb down the chimney pot, you know.
You're going to be in trouble next month, Jerry, because Renee and I will just be here going, ho.
I've used it in all my training groups over the last 30 years, and it's a lovely way. When I particularly love it when I hear, you know, like students or members of a group sharing, and there's this little rustle of hoes coming out, and you can see them almost, so I'm not alone, you know, because so much of what you said, Renee, so much of speaking out, so much of standing up does feel so very alone. And you know, that's where the trauma of speaking truth comes from, you know, because aloneness is one of the greatest traumas. You know, no matter, even in a crowded room, people can go through trauma and feel utterly alone. And sometimes that's just an internal state, but sometimes they speak out. And just for a moment, before anyone reacts, you don't know whether you're alone or not in that view. And that's the courage of believing in truth. There is a trauma of aloneness, I think, that coming together and speaking like this, Roz, when you say, I feel it here with you guys, I feel it with you too. I hope the listeners feel it with us. I hope they feel that their voice is part of our voice and our voice is part of their voice. And these human voices are all human. And actually, at the deepest level, every voice is also divine.
I think they will, especially after this week. I think this has been brilliant. And I love the way you've called out to them so many times, Jerry, to share with us. I think it would be great in the next, you know, as we go on, if we all do it as well, because some will really resonate with you, Jerry, and some with Renee and me. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, guys. I've so enjoyed this session. I think it's been a really thoughtful, reflective, and we've opened up, if you like, more questions than answers, haven't we?
You're listening to Real People with Jerry Pives right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
The
The Sound of Silence by Simon and Garfunkel. What a beautiful song that is. And you've been listening to Psychobabble with me, Jerry Pives, a psychotherapist down in the South Island, with Dr. René de Monchy, a psychiatrist up in the North Island, and with Ros Neelan-Cook, an ex-psychologist over in the Blue Mountains of Australia. A very big thank you to you both, and I really appreciate your generosity and your contributions to helping us all understand just what it is that we are really dealing with. And I'd love to hear from you what your views are regarding what you think we're really up against these days. Do write in to inbox@realitycheck.radio or text us at 2057. So as we close out to the wondrous tune of Psychobabble by the Alan Parsons Project, this is me, Jerry Pives of RCR Reality Check Radio, signing off and wishing that God's blessings may fall upon you and all your loved ones. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.